So much to get to today. Some real new interesting insight on Zach Wilson and some of the mistakes that we saw in week one and how easily correctable they are. The Giants and staring 0-3 in the face, if this goes the way that these kind of games usually have gone for the last several years for the Giants, that could be an absolute disaster. Whether or not the Met fans should be rooting for the Red Sox, I have some thoughts on that. We also, though, start with the New York Yankees on a few different fronts. Look, beating a bad team down the stretch of the season is something that you are supposed to do, and they are doing it. So you get the credit for getting that done in this particular instance. Not everybody is going to be Dane Dunning or Colby Allard in who you face the rest of this season. But it's funny. You watch the Yankees, and would you have ever imagined that the most inconsistent part of them this season would be their offense? Well, in fact, you probably would have, because you saw it last year, and you've seen it in years past, and you've seen it to the point where you're starting to question whether or not there's some insanity involved. What am I talking about? Well, are you beating your head on a rock when you continue to pursue the same sort of structured team that has not been able to make it work over the last several years? A big theme for the Yankees, a major shift in philosophy that has transpired over the last several years, is it has gone from championship or bust to let's win our 90 to 100 games, get in the playoffs, and let the chips fall where they may. And the chips haven't exactly fallen where they're supposed to. So now there is not nearly as much urgency on the ultimate prize as there has been in years past. There's a form of acceptance to it that just hasn't been, well, I would say warmly greeted by fans. And I would look at it and honestly think, what changed here? When did it change? You know, it changed when Brian Cashman around 2015 didn't all of a sudden have somebody really breathing down his neck all the time, and when it was clear that he was the fifth Steinbrenner, if you will. So they are in a position now where it's really the worst that it's been in quite some time, in that they are a team that should be infinitely better than they are, but those 90, 100 games are not as much of a lock. They're at 85. They should get there and let the chips fall where they may. Well, they may fall with the Yankees on the outside of the postseason. I mean, you listen to Aaron Judge talk last night. And can you imagine this for a second? Imagine this kind of thought. Aaron Judge said last night that, yeah, you know what? It's kind of cool to be in this position. Because, you know, usually we've got this kind of thing wrapped up. And, you know, hey, a little more urgency to it down the stretch of the season. What a nice change of pace. What? What are you talking about? You'd rather be in this situation now? Look, I understand trying to make chicken salad, but now it's exciting that you're in a position of actually fighting and scrapping just to get in the postseason? No, this is not what the Yankees are supposed to be all about. So with that in mind, this is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. What are the issues here that are really strangling them in a lot of ways from being a much better team or being the team that they believe they should be based on how they constructed it? One of the issues that continues to come up from fans, and I just don't understand, is the manager. You know, Aaron Boone is not the problem. People want to fire him and run him out of town. And for the life of me, I do not understand it. This is not the issue. The issue is with how this team is constructed. He drives me insane at times. Are there mistakes that are made inside a game when it comes to pitching changes sometimes? Sure. Absolutely there are. But there are with every manager in the game, across the board. So I'm not going to get on him about that. When he drives me insane is when he goes the complete other end of the spectrum the other day about what Gary Sanchez, how we need to focus on the positives of what Gary Sanchez does defensively, those kinds of things. His job is to protect players, but there is a certain limit to it, especially when you're a 28-year-old catcher. But this is part of the description. Go out there, take the bullets, defend our players at all costs. And he does that. He does that. And it's admirable the way he does it. So if all of this does not work out in the next couple of weeks, and you think one of the fixes is firing Aaron Boone, please give me what the actual solution to it is, and don't you dare say the name Buck Showalter. Don't do it. And I love Buck, and it would be fantastic for him to be the Yankee manager, but it's not happening. What Brian Cashman, what the Yankees are going to do, is go bring in the next lackey. You know, Boone, I don't want to call him a lackey, because I do genuinely believe that he is on board with most of what the Yankees want to do. I don't believe for a minute that he wanted to go with an opener in the postseason last year, but I do believe that for the most part, he is in lockstep with them philosophically about how to play things. But the next guy is just going to be another yes man. If you're looking for somebody to change the dynamic and get fired up and scream and yell at players, and all of a sudden you're going to get results, you're out of your mind. You are out of your mind. Look at the real problem, guys. The construction of the roster. And Brian Cashman, let's let that go. He's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. He's going to be here. So look at the players that have to not be here anymore. The Gary Sanchez's that have to not be here anymore. The energy vampires like him. The Gleyber Torres players that have to not be here anymore. You know, I understand what Brett Gardner has done this year, but you know, it's time to move on from Brett Gardner. Like, get out while the getting's good and restructure this. Figure it out. Because this way has not worked for the longest time. It has not worked. Unless you're going to continue to keep the mentality of as long as we get in the playoffs, we're fine. Which, here is completely unacceptable. That's not what it is. It's not what it's supposed to be. And just very quietly somewhere, the Yankees pulled a bait and switch on that little contract that you have as fans, that you've always had with them, the unspoken contract that says we are going to do everything we can within our power to win a championship each and every year. It is a contract that very few other organizations have with their fans. It is understood. And somewhere in the last several years, the Yankees changed the fine print. And you weren't outraged. Look at what actually has to be fixed. So is Boone the problem? Does he have to get fired? 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Please explain to me how Aaron Boone is part of the problem if the Yankees don't get home. Remember, it's not even a lock that Aaron Boone stays if they make the postseason. If they get the wild card. Not by any stretch is that a lock. Remember what happened with Girardi a few years ago. And Michael has said this time and again, and it's 100% true. If you decide to fire Aaron Boone, it is the most remarkably hypocritical move that you can make if you're the front office, because he has done everything that you have wanted him to do. Aaron Boone is not to blame for the Yankees' mess right now. And yes, a couple of wins in a row, not trying to blow up what is some momentum, at least for once. But it doesn't feel like it's a foregone conclusion that even if they get to the postseason, that that doesn't change with the manager. Let's hit it. Jay in White Plains up first today on 98.7 ESPN on Greeny. Jay, what's going on, dude?
Hey, what's up, brother? I just want to say the show is awesome, but I blame the players.
Thank you.
And
I've
the
been
management.
On for 9 minutes.
That's what got me listening to you, man. Man. But I got off speaker here. Let me get off. I just want to blame the players, man. You got the power. You got the lineup, man. It's sick. And they don't gel together. That's all. But I would say, like, you know, every time Judge hits a homer, Stan hits a homer. I love it. But I don't blame Boone. Boone is good,
it
man.
Is bizarre. And that home run by Stanton last night, I don't think got 20 feet off the ground. That was just, as Lindsay Adler of The Athletic put it, the line driviest home run that she's ever seen, and I would agree on that front. But as far as not gelling together and all that, I don't even buy into that so much as you've had just massively disappointing seasons from some guys like DJ LeMahieu, who still doesn't take enough of a hit when his OPS is down 200 points this year. And the fact that you can rely on Judge, but even Stanton to a degree has had a really good season, but I just look at everybody else and I don't know who I'm supposed to feel like is actually a difference maker on this team anymore.
My friends, like, why can't we get like Turner from the Dodgers or a Walker on the Padres? I mean, that trade, you know?
Well, that's what LeMahieu's like that? Supposed to LeMahieu, be, and thanks LeMahieu? For the call. That's the problem. That's what DJ is supposed to be. He's supposed to be your Justin Turner. And he is not hitting like it this year. I'm befuddled by that one. That's the one that completely throws me off. You could argue that I am more surprised. You could argue about how I feel. That I am more surprised that LeMahieu has been this bad than Judge has been this healthy. And that is really, truly saying something, I promise you. Tim in Basking Ridge, New Jersey is next on 98.7 ESPN. Tim, what's going on?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. I think I agree with you completely. It's definitely not Aaron Boone's fault. And I don't know what's going on in that clubhouse, but I think ever since Jeter left, there's been, you know, there's not been someone, I feel like, breathing down the necks of other players. Like, can you imagine if Jeter said, when you were talking before about what Judge in the locker room, can you imagine if Jeter said something like that? You know, is there someone in that clubhouse who's like, hey, knock it off, you know, let's get our crap together and win a ball game. Let's make the playoffs. Let's go win a World Series. I think it's not leadership in the office. It's not leadership in the coach's office. I think we just need more leadership on the field. You know what I mean?
I do understand what you're saying. I don't think it's everything. Thanks for the call. How many players-only meetings and how many team meetings have they had this year? Like four or five? Something like that. And they've all been led, theoretically, by Judge. Judge doesn't strike me as somebody that is a great boisterous leader. And Jeter never was either. There was just the ultimate respect that Jeter was all about winning every possible game. And it was how he carried himself in that respect that gave him that presence among other players. Right now, if you want to argue about whether or not they have enough leadership, it's a fair argument. LeMahieu was supposed to play that role too, but again, more of a quiet guy. He's the kind of guy that you want young players paying attention to and say, do what he does. The problem is, what he's doing this year is underwhelming. Bobby in the car phone's next. 98.7 ESPN. Bobby, what's going on?
Hey, man. You know, to me, Boone is a part of the problem. He's not the, you know, the sole possession of the problem. His in-game decision-making is suspect. And Brian Cashman just needs to go. This guy, if he could ever just get us a pitcher that we need when we need it, he would be okay. But I don't know what the hell he'd be thinking about, man. That's enough.
But how much of the blame do you think actually goes on Boone?
Well, I'll give you a prime example. He knows Aroldis Chapman is having problems, and he still brings him in the game when the game is crucial. Come on, man. Common sense.
But who's the better option when Loaisiga has been out?
There's times that he could have left other pitchers in that were handling it.
Hey, look.
I don't care how much money this guy makes. If he's not striking people out, he's useless.
But look, I don't disagree. He's a bully on the mound, Bobby. Thanks for the call. He's a bully on the mound. He is somebody that if you punch him in the mouth, he is going to fold. But if you allow him to go out and absolutely dominate you because that's all he's thinking about, well, that's what he's going to do. And so I don't have an issue if you're going to throw Chapman out there considering what he has been in his career. Yes, when it goes over for a lengthy period of time, you have to do something about it. And they did for a bit. They did. Loaisiga coming back. And then this other interesting little tidbit here with the return of Luis Severino last night. Here's Aaron Boone after the game asked about what kind of a factor he can be.
It's Luis Severino, so I'm not going to cap what that could be. I mean, we'll see. You know, I mean, it's pretty late here in the season, but that's a talented person and a great pitcher, and so, you know, I don't want to put too many expectations on him, but I'm not going to limit what he's capable of here down the stretch and what kind of role he could serve in. So, but tonight, you know, we celebrate him and just his journey back to a major league mound. Really happy for him and proud of him.
Look, I think for him, this is an interesting situation because you have to be someone who is very, very special to come back from not pitching in 800 days, two full seasons, and you're a starting pitcher, and now you're going to ease your way back in and maybe join the back end of that bullpen. Is that really something that's going to help? I actually think it is. I'm always hesitant when it comes to this kind of thing. I'm skeptical because I don't believe that you could take somebody who has done something for their entire career and just throw them back into a completely different role in the month of September with 10, 12 games left, and you're asking them to then be a major factor on the back end of your pen and help shut the door when your closer has struggled, when you haven't had Loaisiga and he's coming back soon, it looks like. Boy, I like the idea. I wonder if it plays with Severino. I wonder if it plays. Because at this point, throwing him back into the rotation feels like it's asking a lot. Frankly, at this point, anything that you're asking him to do, coming into what is the heart of a pennant race down the stretch, just trying to make it into the postseason, and asking him to step in after 2 years off and be a big factor, and maybe in a role that he's never been in before. It's asking a lot, but I kind of like the idea. Steve in Yonkers is next on 98.7 ESPN. Steve, what's going on, dude?
What's going on, brother? How you been?
Good. You?
Good. I was the one with the food combinations, turkey, bacon, egg, and cheese on a corn muffin, if you remember.
Vaguely, and if I'm incorrect, I was very skeptical of that.
Yes, you were.
Yeah. Turkey, bacon, egg and cheese on a corn muffin. First of all, you lose me a turkey bacon. Yeah. Otherwise, I would be willing to try that because, listen, let's call it what it is. Corn muffin, delightful. It's delightful. But I don't know if I'd go all of that together. Sometimes when we take, and I think this was the argument, you could tell me if I'm wrong, and I know this is why you called. Sometimes if you try to take too many awesome things and jam them together and just assume that it's going to triple the awesome, it ends up just blowing it up. And I would lean more toward the negative on that than the positive.
true.
Anyway.
Reason for my call. I do blame Cashman a little bit, and going back to two calls ago where we didn't have a clubhouse leader in Jeter, I think we did in Didi Gregorius. He stepped in, made an impossible situation, and he excelled in it. And then you let him go because you have a shiny new toy in Gleyber Torres for pennies. That's where I blame Cashman. Didi was a great clubhouse personality. He gelled the team, and I think that's what this team is missing. Somebody of that nature gelling the team together. I don't see the camaraderie anymore. They might show it, but I really don't think that it's there. When Didi left, it started going downhill.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I get it on Didi's front. I understand where you're coming from. However, we got to stop living in the past on Didi, right? We're now 2 years removed from that decision. And I know for a fact that there were many in the Yankee organization at the time that were not convinced that Gleyber Torres was going to be a good shortstop. There were many that felt that way, especially the way his body is built. So that's where I understood it at the time of wanting to keep him. All of what you're saying is 100% accurate. Dude, we're 2 years out. It's time to move on from Didi, man. It's time to get past that. You have to understand that Didi Gregorius is long gone. And by the way, what's going on with him in Philly this year? They're ready to move on from Didi. It has been an atrocious season for him. Absolutely atrocious. 800-919-3776. Carlin, in for Greeny today. Get on the phones. Load them up. In just one moment, we discuss more about what has become an interesting situation involving Zach Wilson and the Jets, and exactly what the problems that we saw on Sunday are easily correctable. But first, how great is it when you get to choose your favorite movie to watch? Well, ZipRecruiter's invite to apply lets you pick your favorites from the best candidates. ZipRecruiter sends you qualified candidates, and you can easily invite your top choices to apply for your job. Lauren Webb, Senior VP of Talent Acquisition at Mindula Health, raves about ZipRecruiter's invite to apply. She says, "I love that feature because we have a much higher follow-through rate if I invite candidates." Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Greeny, G-R-E-E-N-Y, to try ZipRecruiter for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Greeny. 800-919-3776. Let's hit Neville in Manhattan real quick before we turn the tide a bit toward the Jet situation. Neville, what's going on, dude?
Well, let's go back to baseball for a moment.
All right, well, we never really left it, but anyway, go ahead.
Okay, I think talking about Cashman and the Yankees and everything else, I think one of the biggest mistakes that he made, Cashman, that is, was not re-signing Tanaka. Had Tanaka come back, he might have won 8 or 9 games, and we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now.
Well, the Tanaka move was just inane. It was inane to let the guy go back to Japan and then hand... Would you have rather had Tanaka at $15 million, which is what he wanted, or Corey Kluber at $11 million? I mean, that's not even close. And to suggest that based off of a workout or two that you were more than comfortable giving Corey Kluber that kind of money, I mean, the guy had barely pitched over the last two seasons. What are you doing? That I could have seen that. I knew that that was the huge mistake that they were making. And I don't care that he threw a no-hitter this year. He hasn't done enough to help them win because he hasn't been healthy. That's all right there. Chris and Mineola next, 98.7 ESPN. Chris, what's up, dude? How are you?
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to bring up on the Yankees. They're 19th in the league in runs. And when you look at the top 10 teams, in team runs on the year hitting, it's all the best teams. You know, the Rays and the Astros have scored 150 more runs on the season than the Yankees have. And I really just think the hitting is really to blame here.
Yeah, and it's because of the construction of the team, because of the kind of hitters that they have. It's funny, we went from wanting to have a couple of left-handed hitters in the Yankee lineup to getting a few left-handed hitters, you know, two of them in Rizzo and Gallo. And what happened with Gallo? Like, how were we shocked? How is anybody surprised that Gallo came here and struggled for a really long time? This Joey Gallo is the right-handed version of everything that, or the left-handed version of everything that's been wrong with the right-handed Yankees. You know, it's home run or bust. And you're right about the run scored. You're 100% right about it. And the biggest issue for me is when you look at the Rays, they have 1,450 strikeouts this season, right? They are third in baseball in strikeouts. The Yankees are sixth. The Rays have scored 804 runs. The Yankees, 660. Think about that for a second. The Tampa Rays, Chris, to your point, have struck out only a handful of times more than the Yankees, yet they have scored 140 runs more in the exact same amount of games.
Yeah, I was shocked at the disparity because, you know, Yankees are low in average, but they're high in on-base percentage. They're high in home runs. You know, everyone wants to put different stock in different stats. But, I mean, when you break it down to just runs, 150 more runs.
Yeah.
It's staggering.
It really, truly is. And they've hit just as many home runs as the Rays. They've done all of that stuff. The Rays just find ways to score more runs. They are better at situational hitting. They might strike out a lot, but they still take advantage when they have clutch spots to deliver. There's no other way to describe it. 800-919-3776. Carlin in for Greeny today. Don't forget that Greeny is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Last night I had Scott Pioli on the show, the former GM of the Patriots and, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs, executive with the Falcons and teams across the league. And we were discussing Zach Wilson and what transpired this past Sunday and what he saw. And I thought he had an absolutely brilliant point regarding his time when he was with the Jets, the Giants. You know, he's Bill Parcells' son-in-law, in case you didn't know. And he talked about this, what they have done with players or with quarterbacks who have been in these kind of situations before and how to really maximize the return on them. This is about a minute. Take a listen.
Part of what they did with Wilson, Jelani Ehart, the offensive coordinator, and Bill Parcells, the head coach, they wanted to make sure that they gave him high percentage opportunities when he threw the ball. Okay, because remember, when Phil got there, the Giants were not fantastic. But what they did was a lot of short passes. They didn't ask him to stretch it down the field and set himself up for failure. Then, you know, that same crew, when we got Vinny Testaverde at the New York Jets, one of the things we had to do with Vinny, even though he wasn't, you know, young, there was too many whispers about him being careless with the ball. So what we did is we put him in a position, Ron Ehart and Charlie Weiss and Dan Henning, put him in a position to be smart with the football by short passes, going short and sideways, get the ball in the hands of the playmakers. And it built his confidence. It built the team's confidence. Then we go to the New England Patriots, and we do the same thing with Brady. For 3 years, people are saying, Brady can't throw the long ball. Now, when I look at Zach Wilson, what we see is this magnificent arm, these incredible tools, these incredible skills. Just because he has those things right now, doesn't mean that you have to show those things right now.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Does anybody believe for a moment that Mike LaFleur went in to make a game plan for the Patriots this past week, sat down with Zach and said, all right, kid, listen, I know it's your second career start. We got Belichick this week. I need you to go out there and chuck it all over the lot and win it for us. Does anybody believe for a second that's what the Jets' game plan was? Of course it wasn't. Wilson felt incredible pressure in that first game at home against the Patriots to show that he was worth it. It wasn't about just bailing out, worrying about those high percentage passes, and just taking the best options. It was, I'm going to go make plays all over the place. And then when he started to try to dig out of it, it became like quicksand. It's like Shane Falco says in The Replacements.
Quicksand. You're playing. And you think everything is going fine. But then one thing goes wrong. And then another. And another. And you try to fight back. But the harder you fight, the deeper you sink. Till you can't move. You can't breathe. Because you're in over your head. Like quicksand.
That's right, Keanu Reeves, Shane Falco. It's like quicksand. And that's exactly what happened the other day with Wilson. Now, the big question is simply this. Does Zach Wilson have the discipline to let it all slow down for himself? To not go out there and feel like he has to go win the game on his own? That's what you're looking for here the next few weeks. We all get excited. Hell, Artie from Brooklyn called up last night and he said, and he was totally serious. Did you see those interceptions? Those were some tight spirals. Look, this is going to be more about Wilson's ability to take what is given to him and really showing some patience. Is he capable of being patient enough to do that? That's going to be the ultimate question here, especially when you're going into Denver this week. Vic Fangio, you know, is going to want to light him up. So can Wilson do that? Dave in Connecticut is next on 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Dave.
Hey, how are you?
I'm outstanding, Dave. How are you?
Well, I was listening to you talk about the strikeout difference and the lack of a strikeout difference between the Tampa Bay and the Yankees. And I thought the same thing. I thought that was going to be a big issue. But if you would look at the data, look at double plays.
Oh, it's
the
brutal.
Tampa Bay Rays have hit into less than half the double plays. And if you look last night, you saw Rizzo hit to the right side of the left side of the infield to the big gap and bring a run in because of the situational hitting. And two players later, Stanton hits into a double play.
Yeah.
There seems to be a psychology there where I'm going to hit that home run or I'm going to strike out. And yeah, the strikeouts are bad. I hate them. But Tampa seems to have guys that will actually situationally hit.
Yeah.
And no, not that, go into a double
there's
play.
No doubt. And that's what gets lost in all of this. And there was an infuriating aspect of this earlier in the year. And it was this, Dave. There seemed to be a narrative coming from the Yankee front office of annoyance of why do people get on us for being so reliant on all of the numbers when it comes to analytics, yet the Rays and all these other teams do it too. Well, it's not even just the reliance on it. It's the fact that they're a lot better at it than you. Because they don't rule out all those other things. Yes, strikeouts are not that important to them, but you're 100% correct. Just to give true context to it, the Yankees have grounded into the second most double plays in baseball this year at 146. And as you said, the Rays, less than half, 67, dead last in the game. They do know how to situationally hit. They do know how to move people along. They do hit well with runners in scoring position to score all those runs. They are able to put themselves in better positions to be successful because, yeah, it's about that, but it's also about balancing everything else in it. The Yankees tried to tell us earlier this year that it didn't matter righty versus lefty. As long as we have the nine best hitters, they could all be righties. Well, how did that work? The Rays had tremendous balance all season long. Righty, lefty in the lineup. Like, they understood that that's still part of the equation. So it's one thing if you're going to be annoyed that you catch heat over using analytics and being analytics driven. But it's another thing when you fail to understand that you are not doing it nearly as well as other teams are. That's just fact. You're doing it at a much worse rate. And they are looking at it and considering many other factors as well, as opposed to just what the numbers say on any given night. Val in the Bronx is next on 98.7 ESPN. Val, what's going on?
What's up, Chris? Once again, brother, you all over the station, man. I can't look for you in the evenings. I can't look for you in the afternoon.
I don't know where the hell I am. I don't know where I am. I'm lost.
You know, I was listening to what you guys were getting into with the Yanks. And all more than you're killing me, because you're talking Jets, and both of those are my biggest woes and worries so far right now. It's hard to be a Yankee fan and a Jets fan right now. But as far as the Yankees are concerned, I want to know really and truly, because everybody's like, I have no problem with them pushing for the long ball and all that stuff like that. I do have a big issue with the double play. And I think that actually, the problem with that is, we don't do the stuff where it comes to like, okay, nobody's out. You got a guy on first or you got a guy on second. What happened to the sacrifice fly just to move him over? You know what I'm saying? Like, what happened to the guys on second? Just, you don't have to, like, we don't need the home run, and it doesn't even have to be a base hit. If you can't get it, just a sack fly to get the guy to third, and the next dude comes up and pushes him over. Like, I don't know where they lost that. And some people say small ball. I'm not talking necessarily small ball. You know what I'm saying? But like,
well, no,
you know,
this is small ball. Let's be clear. The very definition of small ball is bunning guys over. That's it.
Yeah. So what happened to the sack fly? Why can't we do that anymore? You know, like,
it's a great question. And here's what the answer is. They have devalued contact in their lineup. They have devalued contact in their lineup. Now, you could say the same thing about the Rays. They have, but they haven't. They do have players who understand what they need to do situationally. And there has to be a reason. It's not just pure luck or an aberration when one team is grounded into 150 double plays and the other is grounded into less than 70. And in terms of runs scored, they have 140 more runs scored. Just think about that statistic for a moment. 140 runs more than the Yankees in the exact same amount of games. And the exact same amount of strikeouts. Boy, they're doing something right, and the Yankees aren't. And they don't want to own up to what these problems are. See, this to me is the single most fascinating aspect of this offseason to come. Are they going to be willing to actually look at what their team is and alter it finally? As opposed to just continuing to ride it out, continuing to put this team back on the field, some of which is unavoidable, but some of which is avoidable, and not change what the problems are. Now, look, for DJ LeMahieu, you just have to hope that this is a year where, first of all, we know he hasn't been 100% healthy. You have to hope that that's a big part of it, too. And that he gets back to being that really good situational player. I still want to believe in him after what he did in his first two seasons as a Yankee. And Judge isn't going anywhere off this year. And Stanton, you know, isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And Joey Gallo is going to be back. Unless you trade him somewhere else. But the real issue here is they need to sign a shortstop. they need to get a good defensive shortstop and a good offensive shortstop, and one that's not just all home runs or bust. They need to get some of the energy changed within this team. And if that energy means that you're getting two defensive catchers and trying to focus your offensive efforts elsewhere, I'm good with that. If that means you're trading Gleyber Torres, who still will have some actual trade value because he is young and controllable, then that's what that means. All of these things have to happen for them to get better. Otherwise, if you're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again, why are we pounding our heads against the wall? Why you, as a Met fan, should not be rooting for the Red Sox to beat you just because you want to see the Yankees in misery too. And the Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia and the Knicks fans who all of a sudden have perked up and started to lick their chops thinking they could get Ben Simmons for nothing. If you want Ben Simmons on this team, you're out of your mind. But first, before I get back to the Yankees and a couple of calls in a minute, lines are open at 800-919-3776, friends. I don't know about you, and this kind of got resolved very quickly last night. The whole Blue Jays-Rays thing absolutely fascinated me. And in case you don't know what I'm talking about, two nights ago, the Blue Jays are playing the Rays in Tampa. Sixth inning, end of the sixth, Teoscar Hernandez throws home to cut down Kevin Kiermaier at the plate, on a play at the plate for the final out. Alejandro Kirk is the catcher, you know, the short, fat guy. Nice guy, but, you know, listen, birds of a feather, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, Kirk is the catcher. His wristband has the card in it that has all of the game plan, so to speak, as far as how to get out the Rays hitters. The card slips out of his wristband as he makes the play and tags out Kiermaier, and Kirk starts to run back to the dugout. The card fell, in essence, right in the lap of Kevin Kiermaier, who looked down at the piece of paper for a good 3 seconds. And then, you know what? I'm going to take this with me. Gets up, kind of looked over his shoulder to see if anybody there saw him, and brought it back to the dugout. Now, for his part, Kiermaier says yesterday that he didn't know what it was, but it was the most roundabout explanation that you have ever seen. It was just bizarre the way he was trying to deny it and really couldn't deny it. It was one of those word salads where he just went on and on for like 2 minutes and he's doing his best to deny that he even looked at it, but he couldn't. So the Blue Jays were apparently just livid, and I totally get it. I understand that you're livid, but you shouldn't be livid at the Rays. You should be livid at yourselves. Are you kidding me? You're going to hold that against the Rays? You had your entire game plan slide out of the card holder in the catcher's wristband, and it fell right into the lap of a player, and you expect him to just leave it there and do nothing with it? Are you out of your mind? If I had the playbook for another team just accidentally left in my lap, am I giving it right back to him? Excuse me, guys, you left your entire playbook over here, how to get me out. Here it is back. I didn't look. See, my eyes are closed. And yet, they were beyond upset with the Rays and with Kiermaier for taking it. Now, Kiermaier didn't get hit last night because apparently it was Kevin Cash who went right over to Charlie Montoya, and apparently Cash and Montoya are very good friends. And he went over to him and apologized and said, here, we're not, this is not what we're about, blah, 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 blah. And Montoya just said, all right, forget it. Wait, what? What? When did this become? You can't possibly take information that is literally handed to you. If you're in a war and you get the other side's plans about where and when they're going to attack you, are you giving it back? Hey, you must have left this over here. Don't worry, didn't look. Baseball games, this is a competitive environment. Like, it's not Bill Belichick taping signals. It's not the Astros doing what they were doing all throughout the last few years. This is accidentally dropping your game plan. That's not cheating. That's just stupid. I cannot believe for the life of me that they were upset about that. So let me ask you this. Is that cheating? To you, is that cheating? 800-919-3776. That is your Dr. Pepper call-in line. It's where we're headed right now. Anthony in the Bronx is next on 98.7 ESPN. Anthony, what's up, dude?
Hey, what's up, Colin? You know, I agree with you wholeheartedly, being a Yankee fan, and I've seen 7 world championships, so that's more than any other team. So if I pass away, I can be kind of happy, but I want more. And, you know, this formula
yes, because
that we've
you're a greedy son
going
of a
on since, 2009, you know, there's an old saying, if you keep doing the same things and expect different results, it's insanity. It's time to change up. I'm almost, as a Yankee fan, rooting that we lose so we don't make the playoffs. Because I'm afraid if we make the playoffs, Brian Cashman is going to think this was a success and he won't tweak the team. So,
Anthony,
you know, for me...
I have to tell you, look, if they don't... You're not expecting Cashman to get moved out, right? Because that's not happening.
Yeah, I know he's part of the family and all that, but man, you know, it's about results, man. It's about
I don't disagree results. With that. I don't disagree with that. You can't be the fifth Steinbrenner and that's your ultimate excuse, and thanks for the call. It's not that at all. Absolutely not. And that's that feels like what it is right now. But if the Yankees make the postseason, and let's say they lose in the wild card, and they don't do anything to change things up, or even if they advance to the division series and they don't do anything to change that up, it shows you exactly where the mentality is now. We have changed that verbal contract that we had with our fans that went from our goal each and every year is to win a world championship and anything shy of that is a failure to, if we get to the postseason, we'll roll the dice and see what happens. All that ever did was softened up any pressure on Cashman. Like, that's where he very subtly got to change the narrative about what they're about, and it worked for him. And the Steinbrenners have bought into it. I think it's, in a lot of ways, the manipulation that goes on is just, it's impressive the way it happens. That's the only word I can use, impressive, to slide that through. When you weren't looking, the Yankees changed the fine print on your little agreement with them that said, we'll pay these prices, we'll show up at the stadium, we'll support everything, and we'll watch, and we'll listen, and in turn, because of who we are and because of what we've always been about, if we don't win a championship, you will do everything you can to make sure that we do the following year. That changed. Now it's get me to the postseason and let's roll the dice, baby. It's bound to come up 7 at some point. It hasn't yet.